නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස So since we have discussed several suttas so far, so I thought of taking another sutta which is related to the five aggregates. Actually, last time also we discussed some insight knowledges which is developed through the five aggregates. And today also I thought of enhancing that knowledge and taking another sutta available from the Khanda Samyukta, that is the connected discourses of the aggregates. And this is called being devout. Now, the term, as it indicates, it is talking about something happened to ourselves. And Buddha has used fairly strong word there, Kajjaniya. So, Kajjaniya Sutta is the Pali term. So, Kajjaniya means khadati, means the one is eating. So, basically, this is talking about that someone or something eating us. So basically we eat sometimes, say we eat food, we eat this and that. But here Buddha mentioned that the five aggregates are eating us. So it's an interesting way that Buddha interpreted this whole process. And the sutta starts with mentioning about the recollection of the past lives. And he mentioned bhikkhus, those ascetics and Brahmins who recollect their manifold past abodes, all recollect the five aggregates, subject to clinging, or a certain one among them. Now basically, so this Pubbe Nivasa Nussati Jnana, or what we call the recollection of the past lives, is one of the abhijna, kind of a direct great knowledges, and it is not possible or not easy to have that. Actually, one has to have a mastery in jhana, and then again they have to master abhinya, then they would be able to attain this Pubbe Nivasa Anusati Jnana. And again, some people can recollect maybe just one life, another maybe five lives, another maybe 10 lives, another maybe 100 lives, other maybe 1,000 lives. So likewise, depending on persons also, this skill or capacity ranges, varies. So therefore, say for example, Buddhas, actually they have unlimited kind of skill. So Buddha actually can recollect any number of past lives. But on the other hand, the Arahants and have this skill, their skill actually vary depending on their mastery in jhana and their whatever the other skills. So basically, anyway, the Buddha's point here, what he want to highlight is whatever they are going to recollect about their past lives, they recollect nothing but the five aggregates. So in that sense, Buddha is in a way not giving much prominence to the recollection. Rather, he tells that how many past lives you recollect, how much you recollect, with what great information that you recollect, still you are recollecting five aggregates. So in a way, this is a very interesting point, because we sometimes give extra prominence, extra value to these skills, recollecting about our past lives. But now Buddha very much like summarizing, very much like putting it in the abstract form. So he simply say, you are recollecting nothing but the five aggregates. Now after mentioning that, so Buddha mentioned how one is recollecting. I had such form in the past, it is just form that one recollects. So sometimes assume that you are able to look at your past life, and probably you may recognize, okay, you were born as a woman, you were born as a male, a man, and you had this kind of a complexion, and you are tall, you are short. And likewise, whenever you are recollecting that the form, it is just the form that you are recollecting. Form in the sense the five aggregates, the first aggregate, Rupakkhanda. And probably you are recollecting that I had these kinds of feelings, I went through these kinds of pleasurable feelings, I went through this sort of happiness, or I went through kind of calamities, certain difficult situations, unsatisfactory situations. Now, all those related to the feelings. So, what you had in that sense is nothing but feelings. And on the other hand, various perceptions. So, you have associated many people, their names probably you can remember, and to whom that you are born to, and to in which village, in which country you were born to. So all these are certain names, perceptions, given conventions that we are referring, and the languages that we have used. And probably you might have heard some children actually talking their past lives, and all of a sudden they are talking in a different, entirely a different language that is not their mother tongue. So I mean, sometimes people are wondering how this little child got that skill. So basically, anyway, still that skill, the language, the words, various names, country names, people's names, proper names, whatever. So all these are comes under the perception, the sanya aggregate, sanya khand. And then Buddha mentioned about the mental formations, various sankhara. So I was really compassionate person during that time, or I was an angry person during that time, I had these kinds of troubles with another person. So likewise, we can recollect about our kind of temperament, about our behavior, about our character, and all those sorts of character-related points, and how we were thinking, what are the viewpoints that we had. Now those all comes under the sankhara khanda, what you call as the mental formations aggregate. And again, the consciousness aggregate, so there are again, I have seen this, I have seen that, I have heard this, I have heard that, I went through these kinds of fragrances, then I had these kinds of tastes, I went through these tactile sensations, I was thinking like this. So likewise, all these sensuous impingements and the sensory kind of experiences that we had, whenever we are recollecting, so that is coming under the consciousness aggregate. So therefore, Buddha in that sense summarizes, mentioning that whatever the beautiful and more descriptive form that you are explaining in your past lives, you are explaining nothing but the five aggregates. So this is interesting in that sense. So Buddha didn't therefore given much prominence to the skill. Rather, he summarizes or tell in abstract. So you are all referring to five aggregates. So in that sense, five aggregates are the ones that we need to investigate. It is not the past lives, but the five aggregates. So five aggregates, you are giving various names, and giving very kind of values, importance, and then you are telling, okay, this is my immediate previous life, or this is the five births before. So likewise, we can define, but irrespective of that, it represents the five aggregates. So after mentioning that, so now Buddha goes on to elaborate the five aggregates. So there he asks why it is called form. Kincha bhikkhave rupang vadeta. So why it is called form? Ruppatiti ko bhikkhave tasma rupanti ucchati. So that is the term Buddha mentioned, ruppati. Ruppati means being deformed. So it is get deformed. How it is get deformed? It is being deformed by cold, deformed by heat, deformed by hunger, deformed by thirst, deformed by contact, deformed with flies, mosquitoes, wind, sun, serpents. So these are very mundane kinds of reasons, causes. So sometimes we have a kind of a perspective that whenever Buddha talking about the forms, probably he might have gone to the atomic level, or he has seen all these subtle characteristics of the form. He may have explained the things in the more elementary level. Actually, to some extent, Buddha mentioned that he mentioned the form consists of four elements: Patavi, Apo, Tejo, Vayo, earth element, water element, fire element, and the wind element. But here, Buddha mentioned why it is called form, because it is get deformed due to various reasons. Now, these reasons are quite understandable. These are not very specific, sophisticated reasons or scientific reasons, but these are more practical reasons. Whenever, if we consider today's terms, now still we are going through the COVID pandemic. So whenever we get affected by the COVID pandemic, so we get sick. So it's just a small virus capable of affecting ourselves, making us completely ill. So therefore, thinking about that sense make us really humble. Rather than we are having very scientific, huge knowledge about the various atoms and values, atomic parameters and etc. etc. So whenever we understand, okay, this body is quite subjected to deformation, it's quite vulnerable, it is oppressed by hunger and thirst, and it is oppressed by various other climatic conditions. So that help us to understand how weak this body is. It's not that we are quite strong and we can bear any situation and we are invincible type of person. Rather, our bodies are quite vulnerable. It is subjected to various issues, various diseases, and those causes are very mundane type of causes. Even a mosquito bite make us ill. You might get the dengue or whatever other diseases caused by the mosquitoes and the flies and the cold, heat. Now, even today, actually, I think in India, they are going through some heat waves. So many people are being affected. So you can understand all these conditions prevalent today help us to understand that how vulnerable these bodies are. They are not perfect. And we think that we are strong, we are beautiful, and I am capable, and all these sorts of things are there. But we never know when this collapse, or when this is going through kind of an disease. So this is the vulnerability that we need to understand. So in that sense, the Buddha's explanation or the definition that he is giving is more helping us to understand this reality. By understanding it, we become more humble, we become innocent, rather than we become kind of proud or conceited having the body. So we are more and more we understand in this term, in this perspective, so we become quite down to earth type of approach, because other people are also helpless, we too are in the same boat. So therefore, very much like we are able to understand the situation of the form in more realistic terms. Now then Buddha goes on explaining what is called the feeling, Vedana. Why it is called feeling? It feels, therefore, because it is called feeling. So what does it feel? It feels pleasure, it feels pain, and it feels neither pain nor pleasure. Now these are the different types of feelings, especially the three types of feelings: pleasurable feelings, Sukhavedana, painful feelings, Dukkhavedana, and then the equanimous feelings, Upekkha Vedana. Now these are always available. Now typically the Sukha and the Dukkha, pleasurable feelings and the painful feelings, are the two extremes that we are jumping from each side. But most of the time we are going through the neither pleasurable nor painful feelings, the equanimous feelings that we sometimes don't even recognize. So our minds are being distracted during that time to other aggregates, because we are going through a very neutral type of feeling. But whenever we are able to pay close attention to the feeling aggregate, so most of the time we can understand these pleasurable feelings, sorry, the equanimous feelings. So for example, whenever you are examining the breath, so breathing is a very neutral process. It is not so pleasurable, it is not so painful, it's a neutral process. So if we are doing Anapanasati meditation, in a given moment, if we are able to understand the feeling tone, so it is very much the equanimous, most of the time it is equanimous. Sometimes in the long run, when you are going through some blissful states, you may encounter pleasurable feelings. But before that, and most of the time, and even when you are going more towards the jhana, say in the fourth jhana, so what you are experiencing is nothing but the equanimous feeling. So therefore, feelings are three types, and Buddha mentioned you feel, you can recognize, therefore it is called feelings. Vedaititi ko bhikkave tasma vedanati ucchati. So you can feel, you can understand there's some kind of a pleasurable feeling, some kind of an equanimous feeling, some kind of a painful feeling. So because of that, it is called feeling. And then perception. Sanjanati ko bhikkave tasma sanyati ucchati. So Buddha mentioned that you perceive, you recognize, you perceive, okay, this is red color. You perceive this is yellow color. You perceive this is white color. Now actually, even we give different names to these different colors, actually from our kindergarten, so we are learning these things. So we assume that you are going to the primary school, and then teacher is showing different colors, and she is actually teaching us, okay, this is called red color, this is called white color, this is called black color. So likewise, she is giving certain names. Now we remember those names. And another occasion when the same teacher or anyone else now showing some kind of a color, so we map that color with our stored memory, and now immediately I am telling, okay, this is white color, this is red color, this is green color, because that perception, that stored information is available in ourselves, and we are, with respect to that, now I am interpreting, now I am recognizing. So now actually we are going through a lot of conventions, and we are giving names to each and everything that we are giving names. Okay, to distinctly recognize ourselves, we are giving names to everyone. So my name is this, your name is that, my child name is this, my daughter's name is this, my father's name is this, my mother's name is this, my country's name is this. So likewise, we are giving so many names just to distinguish, just to recognize. And more than that, say we are using various languages. Actually, even before come to the language, we have letters. Using letters, and they all are with certain patterns, okay? When you are writing letter A, it has a certain shape. When you are writing letter C, it has a certain shape. So you can see how these letters are constructed. It may be because of the convenience, it is because of the convention coming through for a long time from generation to generation. So this is how the letters have come through, and using letters, now we are making words. And in order to properly communicate, now we are putting various tenses, and then we are putting verbs, and we are putting grammar, and all sorts of that grammatical parts also come into the picture. Now we can write a sentence. The other person also can understand, because he too learned grammar, he too learned the same vocabulary. Therefore, when I am communicating, the other party also can understand. Now we have a complete language using which we can write essays, we can write books, so the others also can understand. Now these are all perceptions. And say, when you consider different shapes, certain rectangular shapes are there, circular shapes are there, triangular shapes are there. Now these are also different types of shapes. Now that is also can store in our mind. Say different colors, different shapes, and certain marks. Say when you are recognizing two people, so how are you recognizing? So this is my brother, this is my say son, or this is my friend. So how are we recognizing? So we are having certain marks on their face, on their body, and we recall them, and we are mapping, and then we recognize, okay, this is my son, or this is my friend, this is my father, this is my brother. So likewise, so we have all these different marks subjected to this the form, and now we can recognize. Similarly, if we use various sounds,
So whenever say a dog is barking, so we can recognize that from a child's cry because it has a different tone. And when someone is singing, we can recognize whether he's a female singer or a male singer, or maybe what is the name of that singer. Even to that level, we can recognize. So when there are two songs, so we can probably immediately recognize, okay, who is the singer who has sung this song. So therefore, these different kinds of marks, signs are available even in the sounds. And similarly, in the smells, different smells are there. I mean, different signs are there. So you can recognize the fragrance of a lotus flower. You can distinguish it from the fragrance of a rose flower, maybe. So likewise, there are differences are also available. So in the fragrances, odors, these differences are there. So using which you are distinctly recognized. And if we consider tastes, so you can recognize different tastes, and that is also another area where the different signs marks are available. And you can recognize various tactile sensations. And when someone is touching you, you can recognize who is this, whether it is the cat who is touching, whether it's a dog who is touching, whether it's my son touching me, my daughter touching me, so whatever like that. So you can recognize because of that certain differences available in the sensations. Those marks are there. And even when we come to the mind, so certain signs are there even in the mind. So there are various mental images. Say you have seen something, and immediately after several years, probably you can quickly remember that, recall that. Certain marks, signs appear in the mind. And now we are giving a name to that. We are giving a person, we are attributing a person to that. So likewise, so all the mental images also have certain marks. So therefore it is mentioned Dhamma Sanya. So you can understand it's a huge area. It's a vast area that we are associating. Different kinds of signs are there, marks are there. And using which we have different even perceptions. So I have my own perceptions, maybe even preconceived ideas. Now things become more complicated, but the fundamentals are nothing but the marks and signs. Now therefore Buddha mentioned these perceptions, sanya is mentioned because we do this perceiving. Sanjanati ko bhikkhave tasma sanyati ucchati. So we do recognition, we do recognize, because of that we call it perceptions. And then we are coming to the volitional formations. Why does it call volitional formation? Now this is an interesting area. Now this is in a way a little difficult because sankatang abhisankaranti ko bhikkhave tasma sankharati ucchati. Now this is very interesting area. Now even there is a form, we are not taking it as it is. So that is an interesting point. Now say for example, you are seeing say a circle of red color. Now when we see that, immediately, okay, this is red color, this is circular. Probably we can attribute it to the perception. But on top of that, okay, I assume that you know about Japan and etc. Probably you may immediately tell, okay, this is the mark of the Japanese. Now what we did? So based on that little sign, so we have constructed. We have attributed so many other information to it. We have added our own preconceived ideas to it, our own likes and dislikes to it. And now all of a sudden we have, maybe we like it. Because I was in Japan, my friends are there. So now whenever I see this red color with a, say, white background, maybe I am recalling the Japanese flag. So I get an immediate affection towards Japanese or to my friend. Or now I am recalling my friend. Now I want to write an email to my friend. But if you consider the very source, it is nothing but a circular shape with a red color. So you can see immediately with by means of this little image, we have attributed so many other things. So we have constructed so many other things. Now this is what called the accept of or the characteristics of the sankhara, where we do a lot of constructions, we do a lot of preparations. We are not stopping at the very sensory perception level or sensory recognition level, onto which we are adding so much of other information, so much of other biases, so much of other, say, cultural values. So this is where we do a lot of constructions. So therefore Buddha mentioned, so whenever we see a particular form, on top of that we do a lot of constructions. Whenever we hear certain sound, with that we do a lot of construction. Say you are hearing a particular sound, now you understand, okay, this is a song, now you want to listen it carefully, and now you recognize who is the singer, and now probably you can remember what are the other songs that that particular singer has sung. Now you even start to sing, and you are becoming more say happy. Now you can see, I mean, previously it's just a sound, but now it is no more a sound, it is a really a fantastic kind of experience. Now all these things are we have constructed. What we originally had is nothing but a little sound. It's a very equanimous type of sound, but onto which we have added so much of things, and now we are in a different world even. And we are imagining and we are thinking, going on and on, we are mentally proliferating. So sort of lot of things are there. Now we are in a different world even. Now this is the construction. Now Buddha mentioned, we do these constructions even to the forms, even to the sounds, even to the smells, even to the tastes, even to the tactile sensations, even to mental images, whatever we encounter. Say immediately there's a kind of a mental image appear in your mind, so some image come to the mind. So we don't see it as a mental image. We don't take it that way. We remember, okay, so what has happened to my country? So my country is now going through some economic crisis. So this is how people are crying. This is how they are screaming. This is how they are protesting. So this little mental image actually previously appeared. But now I am thinking so many things. I even become depressed because of this thinking. But the source, if you consider, is nothing but a mental image. So all these constructions, therefore Buddha mentioned, coming under the sankhara aggregate. So whenever we go through a little feeling, we enhance it, we exaggerate it, we give names to it, we add our own likes and dislikes to it, and therefore we construct based upon feelings. Whenever we come through certain perceptions, signs, marks, on top of which we do constructions. And whenever, assume that you come across a certain mental, quality. Say that a little anger comes. That is someone that you don't like, and he is passing by. Now you saw him, the little anger rising in yourself. Now to that anger, you don't stop at that level even. Actually, the anger also arisen because of maybe some amount of constructions. But even when anger rising, you don't stop at that level. You think about the past, how he did wrong to you, how he neglected you, how he ill-treated you. And thinking about all the past, now you add more and more to the anger. Or probably you may thinking about the future, how he is going to defeat me, how he is going to, say, bully me or whatever it is. Now you are thinking and constructing more anger. Now even that level of mental state, we are not keeping as it is. We add so many things to it, depending on our own biases, likes and dislikes, our traits. And now we are in a kind of a mess. We are in a more complicated kind of a situation. Kind of a vulnerable situation now. now we are subjected to all sorts of mental proliferation, and we may even react because of that feeling, because of that kind of perception that we have. But if we come to the very root, it is nothing but a small type of a perception, and maybe small type of a little mental state, a little anger, little lust, little jealousy. But if we are going to act upon that and we are going to react, then we are going through a lot of troubles. This is where Buddha mentioned the formations aggregate. And when it comes to the consciousness aggregate, here Buddha mentioned cognizes. Vijanati iti kho bhikkave tasma vijnanati ucchati. So vijanati. Vijanati means cognizing. Now here, actually, cognition happens by separating from many others. Say, for example, there are thousands of items available in your room, available in your house. Now, among them, you are focusing on to something, a particular thing, a special thing. Suppose that you are going to make something. Say, you want to prepare some food. Now we are searching flour. Now immediately you remember, okay, where I have kept flour, and now you are trying to locate that particular place, and now you are focusing your attention to that, and now you are reaching to that tin of flour or what is the basket of flour, and now you are selecting it. There are many other items available in your house, in your kitchen, but among them, you are able to properly recognize, properly distinguish, separate from others. You are able to focus onto a particular thing which you want. So this focusing part, this cognizing part, separating one thing from everything else, is a function of cognition or function of consciousness. Now Buddha actually has given kind of an example here. It cognizes bitter, it cognizes sour, it cognizes bitter, it cognizes pungent, it cognizes sweet, it cognizes sharp, it cognizes mild, it cognizes salty, it cognizes bland. So likewise, now actually he is explaining with respect to the taste. So different tastes are there, maybe salty, maybe bitter, maybe sharp, mild. So different kinds of tastes are there. So among these different tastes, now say for example, you are preparing a lump of rice and you are mixing with different kinds of curries, adding this and that, and now you put that lump of rice into your mouth. Now everything is mixed, but still you can recognize, okay, I'm experiencing some salty taste, I'm experiencing some bitter taste, I am experiencing some, say, sweet taste. So among, there are many different kinds of tastes are available, you are capable of distinctly recognize. Say, for example, there are many people available. So among many people, now you can distinctly recognize, you can properly put your attention to a particular person, and you can focus your attention there to him, and you can recognize. So one function of the consciousness, one important function of the consciousness is this separation. Separating and identifying, separating and focusing the attention. Your attention is not a kind of a pervaded attention. It is not an unestablished kind of attention, but it is established on something. You have selected something. You have selected someone. You have focused onto something. So your attention is properly focused. So it is therefore one important function of the consciousness. Now, after explaining these characteristics of the five aggregates, now Buddha give us something to reflect. So he mentioned, I am now being devoured by form. In the past too, I was devoured by form, in the very same way that I am now being devoured by present form. If I were to seek delight in future form, then in the future too, I shall be devoured by form in the very same way that I am now being devoured by present form. Having reflected thus, he becomes indifferent towards past form. He does not seek delight in future form, and he is practicing for revulsion towards present form, for its fading away and cessation. Now this is the Vipassana practice. So basically, now we have some idea about the five aggregates. So after we have some understanding, some theoretical understanding, now we need to practice. Now we need to understand the form. We need to understand feelings. We need to understand perceptions. We need to understand mental formations. And we need to understand different kinds of consciousness practically. And we need to investigate. And again, we need to reflect. And we need to understand how our attention being consumed time to time by each and every aggregate. Now here the term Buddha use is very strong term, devoured. Say for example, the form sometimes takes ourselves completely onto it. We can't think of anything else. Suppose that you are going through a severe illness and your body is aching and going through a lot of pains. And you are being completely into it. You have lost your kind of freedom. Now you can't pay attention to anything else. I mean, you can't pay attention to your education. You can't go to the office. You can't be with your children. Because your body being sick. You are severely sick now. You have to pay attention to that. So you are being stuck with it. You have been sort of restricted with the form. You can't go out of it. You can't get rid of it. Because it is being in a tense situation, sick situation, in a disease. Now you are stuck there. You can't go out of it. And again, it's going through severe pain. And pain is also now eating you. Pain is also bringing your attention again and again. You can't pay attention to something else. Say someone is talking, someone is singing, a lot of music is going on, but you are not ready to listen to them because you are stuck in the painful feelings that you experience. The body is sick and you have to pay to that, and you are going through the aging process. Maybe you are getting closer to the death. You can't think of anything else. You can't plan many years ahead because now you are going through the dying process. So likewise, so this body, even though it's a kind of a tool, even though it's a kind of a vehicle that we can get a lot of advantages, we can make use of it to develop a lot of spiritual qualities, things are there, but time to time, most of the time, actually it is grabbing our attention. It's always trying to win our attention. A fair amount of our time have to spend to maintain the body, to look after the body, to satisfy its needs. If we are not taking care of it, it is getting further troubled. I mean, further sick. Again, then we are in a more troubled situation. So therefore, you can see, when we consider this human form is a really vulnerable thing, and we don't know whenever it is going through sickness. And as Buddha mentioned, Ruppatitiko bhikkave tasma rupanti ucchati, it is always ready to, vulnerable to go through any sort of deformation. So, therefore, we are being locked in it. We are being stuck in it. So, when we are looking at that angle, so we feel a little dispassionate towards the body. Rather than we being conceited, than we being admiring our body, I am having a beautiful body, stronger body, prettier body, like that. Rather, when we think in that angle, where Buddha mentioned that the form is constantly devoured, Buddha mentioned that in the past I was devoured by this body. In the present, I am being devoured by the body. In the future, if I am having a body, so it is subject to the same situation. So when you are reflecting like this, now you are getting fair amount of dispassion towards the body. You become kind of having a disenchantment towards the body. You don't want to have further bodies in the future. Maybe, I mean, if I don't have a body, I don't want to worry about the sickness. I don't want to worry about COVID pandemic. But since I have this body, I have to worry about it. I have to take care of it. I have to pay full attention to it. I have to find a health insurance. I have to find a doctor. I have to channel the doctor. So many things are there. My time is consumed. My money is consumed. I have to spend a lot of time in the office just to maintain the body, to earn something, to find food to maintain the body. So likewise, when we are thinking in that angle, so we will understand, okay, this body is kind of a burden. And when reflecting that way, Buddha mentioned, so you now become somewhat dispassionate towards the body. And you are now ready to maintain an attitude, maintain a mind, which is dispassionate towards the body. And you allow various kinds of perceptions pertaining to the body to fade away. Rather than you being infatuated by various bodily images, say you are thinking about this body, that body, her body, his body, this thing, that thing, and completely consumed by various images of the body, consumed by various images of the forms, rather you are now trying to remove those images, those occupations. Suppose that you have a kind of an attention, and that attention being occupied by so many objects. So you are remembering your wife, you are remembering your husband, you are remembering your children, you are remembering your parents, remembering your country, your culture, this and that, and so many things to remember. So your whole attention being consumed by so much of mental images which have some links towards the form. So we can say as the signs of the form. And rather than occupying your mind with that, how about clearing the mind? How about cleansing the mind? How about keeping the mind more pure? How about keeping the mind more spacious without occupying the mind with so much of images, so much of different shapes, different colors? How about keeping the mind very clean, tidy, kind of transparent, without these kinds of scars of various forms? Now this is where meditation is quite important. So you can't cleanse your mind immediately. So in order to maintain a purified mind, so now we have to take a kind of different type of exercises, mental exercises. Now we need to find out various methods how to purify the mind. My mind being always consumed by this form, my attention being driven by that. How about having a relaxed attention? Rather than being always grabbed by the form, how about having a somewhat relaxed attention towards the form? I'm not neglecting the form, but how about having a kind of mild attention? Just to maintain it, not to get devoured by it, not to get deluded by it. Now this is where the mindfulness practice and again the, say, elements meditation is quite helpful. Actually, Buddha gave various perspectives to sort of enlighten us. So in that one sense, he is mentioning that this form is going through different postures. So you are now recognizing different postures, what it is going through. And then you understand, okay, my attention is fairly now with the postures. Actually, first of all, we need to focus ourselves onto a particular selected object. Now we have selected the form. Because when it is jumping from form to feelings, feelings to perceptions, perception to, mental formations, jumping again and again to all these different aggregates, so it is very difficult to properly analyze, properly understand, properly deeply understand. So therefore, you need to select one first, whatever the easiest one first, and then you need to further improve in that sense. So there, so we take the Kaya Anupassana, the very first aggregate we are using. So we are using our own body to reflection for the investigation. So we prepare a certain amount of mindfulness, concentration, and that mindfulness and concentration being put on to the body, and now we are investigating the body to understand the very actual nature of the body. And then we may understand, okay, this body is going through various postures, and it is going through various kinds of different parts. It is not a single body, it is constructed with so many body parts. It has head hair, it has body hair, it has nails, it has teeth, it has flesh, it has sinews, it has skeleton. So all together, when we are binding together, assemble it in a particular way, in a particular shape, now we call it a form. Now we are getting a deeper understanding about the form. I mean, it is not a single unit. It is constructed with so many different bodily parts. Now we have another, some developed understanding about the form. And further, assume that you are going through elements meditation. Now you recognize very, say, fundamental characteristics of the form. It is showing sometimes hardness. It is showing sometimes softness. Showing sometimes smoothness, roughness, heaviness, lightness, flowing, cohesion, heat, cold, sort of movements, vibrations. Now these are the very fundamental characteristics of the form. So more and more you understand, so you get a deeper understanding about the form. It is no more kind of my male or female, my American or Russian or Sri Lankan or type of form, but it is just the form. It is consisting different kinds of element characteristics. It is something common to all the beings, animate and inanimate things. Now here, we are very much like deepening our understanding, enhancing our understanding about the form. We do a lot of investigation. Because of that, we got a lot of understanding. And one interesting point here is that Buddha mentioned, more you have understanding about the form, realistic understanding about the form, you definitely going to have dispassion towards the form. Because we don't have that kind of proper understanding, that is where we are blindly attached to the form, blindly holding the form, blindly giving so much value to the form. We compare our form with another person. I am beautiful, I am better than the other person, so I am giving more emphasis, more value to my form, my body, my shape, because we don't understand. But when we go through insight practice, so there we have a better opportunity to understand the reality. So it is constructed of different bodily parts. Even if we go further, it is with element characteristics. And they are so vulnerable, they are so impermanent, uncertain, and they constantly change. Now these kinds of insights help us to have fair amount of dispassion towards a form, fair amount of understanding towards a form. Now if we are able to have that type of understanding, Buddha mentioned, so he may reflect, this form is nothing but four elements, the other form, another external form, outside form, is also nothing but four elements. So where am I giving more emphasis, more value? Everywhere, whole physical world is consisting of all these four elements. So now you can see certain characteristics. Now actually we were discussing certain characteristics of the form, certain characteristics of the feelings, certain characteristics of the perception, certain characteristics of the mental formations, and certain characteristics of the consciousness. Now, even if you do this Kaya Anupassana, you can see all those characteristics of five aggregates have changed. Actually, we have used only the form aggregate for our sort of special scrutiny, our special investigation. But with the progress of the investigation, actually, we are even developing or changing the other aggregates as well. We are having certain kind of a different attitude towards other aggregates as well. Say, for example, more you investigate form, you become dispassionate. That means even the feeling aggregate has changed. Now, when the form is going through some changes, you are not going to any kind of despair or unhappiness or kind of things, because you understand this is the nature of the form. So you are not going to any kind of a depression, because you understand this is the reality. The form is subject to change. It is going through the aging process. It is going through the dying process. I have to accept it. This is the nature. Now the possibility of arising a lot of unnecessary mind-made feelings, painful feelings, are now fairly avoided because you have fair understanding about the form. And on the other hand, whenever you see form, we typically have different perceptions. Okay, this is beautiful, this is this, this is that. I like it, I don't like it. So like has different perceptions, different mental constructs. So we do have. But more we understand about form, we don't want to do that. It is just merely the form. And I don't want to construct based on the form. Let the form be as it is. Now you are having a kind of a distant relationship with the form. Rather than being focused onto it and getting entangled in it, now you are able to separate yourself from the form and live more comfortably without getting entangled, without getting confused, without being devoured by the form. And as I mentioned, the one important task of the consciousness is to establish onto something, to locate onto something, to select something, to distinguish among many others. You are distinguishing, distinctly recognizing a particular thing. But more you understand the realistic nature, the common characteristics of the form, this form and all the outside forms are very similar. It is nothing but the four elements. Now mind doesn't want to distinctly recognize even. Wherever it see, it may understand everywhere it is kind of a dissolution. Things are arising and passing away. So you can't particularly focus onto a particular form. No point. Now mind can't establish. Or consciousness can't establish. Now the very function of the consciousness aggregate is being blocked. It's being fairly checked, inhibited. Because you can't properly establish the mind, consciousness, onto a particular form. Because you understood the correct nature of the form. So you can see, so even the kayanupassana, even when you are working on the form aggregate, it is giving a lot of insights which help us to have a different way of treating these five aggregates. Previously we were treating them and sort of binding with them, holding them, grasping them, clinging with them, attached to them, all sort of things are there. Now whenever you have thorough understanding about the form aggregate, we actually discussed more today on the form aggregate, and even that very understanding has a severe impact on the other aggregates as well. And how other aggregates are working on the form aggregate are now being fairly changed. So Buddha explained about the other aggregates as well. So today I will stop here, and in the future sessions we will take other aggregates also. So you can see, so it's a very interesting topic Buddha is talking on aggregates and how they are consume us and how they are devoured. They are being devoured by us, or we being devoured by them, and why they are called in different terms, and how we are going to change those wrong perceptions. And this is something that we have to further reflect, and we need to practice so that we have a proper understanding about these five aggregates. So with that note, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So for any of you friends that's joining us for the first time, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you can also send them via the chat. Bhante, so I have a question, which is, so like in the daily life, you know, I observe the mind clinging onto this and that, and it's actually quite an unpleasant feeling, right, when the mind is, you know, not tranquil and is, I guess, in a way agitated. So is it through the practice that we continuously recognize that these create unpleasant feelings that gives the mind that desire to actually no longer be attached to those things and to just let go and not let these things affect us? Is it just through this ongoing repetition of seeing kind of the unpleasant feeling that you know, the defilements bring to us that allows us to then be relieved from them?
Maybe because I mean vipassana practice gives us more realistic kind of a perspective, so that probably does not helping us to delude ourselves. Now say for example, whenever we become delighted, so that has a fair amount of ignorance included. Say you are seeing a movie and you are enjoying it. Now, in order to enjoy a movie, you have to be fairly deluded. You have to take it as something real, and it is beautiful, and these are real people. They are fighting, they are laughing, they are loving, they are going through some romanticism. So, I mean, these are real. So, this is how we have to take it. Then only we can enjoy. But whenever we see it more properly, whenever we understand, okay, this is just merely a movie, they are merely actors, these things are characters, they are not real characters, this is not a true story, they are simply acting. Now we get into a kind of a dry kind of a situation. I mean, we can't enjoy the movie. So similarly, when we see the reality of different forms, different, say, as you mentioned, the mental states and the defilements, so we can't enjoy it. So probably it can be little equanimous in that sense. But that is why Buddha time to time mentioned that if you feel that your mind is not balanced now, you are doing a lot of investigations, so these investigations reveal that those kinds of impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-governable nature, and that is, if we are not properly balancing our mind, it can even lead to a little kind of dry, a little kind of depressive type of state. So at that time Buddha mentioned, don't continue in that way, so just associate some other little delightful object for that moment and make your mind little happy, more joyful. Because the mental balance is quite important. So that is where Buddha mentioned about Panidahaya Bhavana and Apanidahaya Bhavana. So Apanidahaya Bhavana is where you don't have any desire. Rather, you are trying to investigate the present phenomena and to understand it properly. So that can be little dry. But when you feel that, Buddha mentioned, okay, now you can stop it temporarily. Now you can switch to a Panidahaya Bhavana. Now you switch to a samatha meditation. Say you are reflecting about the qualities of the Buddha. You are reflecting about the loving kindness. So when you do loving kindness meditation, now you feel a little bit of loving kindness. You feel compassion. You feel a little happy, comfortable, and mind is fairly uplifted. So now mind has recovered from that dry attitude. Now again, you can switch back to the Apanidahaya Bhavana, to the four foundations of mindfulness. And now you can restart investigation. Because our mind is like a child. So you can't teach the child immediately. So you have to use certain tactics to entertain him. and you are, say you are, you want to teach him mathematics. So you can't simply use typical, say, numbers, etc. So instead you are using various tools, various, say, playing toys, etc. If you want to count, and you are using those, using toys, now you are teaching how to count to 10, etc., etc. So these are different techniques, so that the child get interested, because it the mechanism used to teach is quite interesting, but at the same time he is learning mathematics as well. Otherwise, if you are simply purely teaching mathematics, it may be really dry. So similarly here in Vipassana also, say whenever you are purely using Vipassana, it could be a little dry, and it can lead to kind of dryness of the mind, bit of unsatisfactoriness of the mind, because what he encounter, what it encounter, what it understand is nothing but the unsatisfactoriness, kind of the impermanent nature, non-governable nature. So it's getting a little bit of dispassion. Now that time to time, if it is going beyond or little coming little depressive, then we need to stop and we need to properly balance it. And even when it comes to the seven enlightenment factors, that is where Buddha mentioned, so you have to be always vigilant, maintain mindfulness, and recognize which direction is more powerful or more excess. If your mind is too much thinking, too much dry, agitated, then Buddha mentioned, don't do the investigation now. Now you got to stop investigation. Instead, now develop samadhi, develop equanimity, develop passaddhi, the tranquility. Now you need to little bit pacify the mind. You need to little bit make it joyful. So on the other hand, if you feel drowsy, if you feel lethargic, and there is no wisdom, now you should not stay in the samadhi. You should not stay in the concentration. Rather, you need to start investigation. You need to examine the things more closely. So likewise, so Buddha mentioned, so time to time when we are dealing with the Vipassana practice, we need to see how these two states, either the mind is agitated or whether it is become lethargic. If it is agitated, you need to stop investigation and put more attention towards samadhi, make your mind more comfortable, tranquil, serene. So that has to be developed. On the other hand, if your mind feels more lethargic, more drowsy, and you don't know where you are, unconscious type of thing, then Buddha mentioned you better stop concentration, you better get up and go to the walking path and do kind of, say, examination, investigation. So likewise, time to time, we have to adjust our practice depending on the situation of the mind.
Banji, so if I may, I guess maybe clarify with like a specific example. So let's say I, you know, was going about a walk and then a thought appeared in my mind. And then I know that I recognize that it's a craving thought.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately there's a sense of unpleasantness with this craving thought, and that it feels like an agitation in the mind. And then now the mind turned towards just watching the unpleasantness, and as a whole, how does it feel in both the body and the mind? And then it's just kind of just watching this, and this kind of unpleasantness also fades away and other things come into the mind. And so it's just constantly watching these various things, you know, mm-hmm. from feelings and also bodily sensations arising and changing, and recognizing that these, and not attaching to any of these in any particular moment, but recognizing that they are all arising out of specific causes and conditions and mm-hmm. habitual tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings a bit of, I guess, kind of like a peacefulness and acceptance to all of these phenomena.
Good. I mean, if you have that peaceful acceptance, and if you can be can tolerate these things for a time being, be patient with them, and you accept, okay, this is the way it is, and I have to bear it for the time being, but I am not feeding them, I am not a victim of them. So that is better then. You don't need to change because you are confident of what you are doing.
Uh-huh.
Because now you are properly facing them, no? You are face to face with them. Various defilements are there, you are observing them, various they give you proper understanding. Now we should not shift to samatha meditation. Rather, we need to patiently endure it, patiently go through it, understand how things are going on. I mean, this is the real nature. I mean, more and more you understand them, you are not feeding them, and they start to naturally fade away because they themselves are not strong. They themselves don't have much energy to sustain for a long time. So if we are confidently observing them, mindfully observing them, properly understanding them, so you just need to continue. With time, they become more and more weaker, and ultimately they start to disappear.
Okay, thank you. That's what I wanted to confirm.
Yeah.
That I'm on the right path.
But sometimes, actually, the point is, these things come more and more sometimes. Because we feel when it is going to have the end, it is become very much like endless. So much defilements. So, but still, we have to bear it and carefully investigate them, allow it to fade away without interfering them, then slowly they may fade away.
Thank you. Hello, Banshee.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a question. Just at the end of your talk, you were saying how the consciousness can get checked when it can't base itself on an object, on a mark. And two questions I had. And with that, you also said, I want to confirm something about the effect on the consciousness would also affect other of the khandhas. And so my question was, if the mind does not feel checked because it, you know, say the sunyata, if the mind is comfortable without being based on something, and then saying that then the consciousness is no longer checked and is at ease, what would be the effect on the sanya, on the sankara, on the other khandhas, if I was understanding
correct
how what you were saying at the end?
Yes. Correct. Actually, that is the very result of the vipassana practice, where you are no more distinctly focusing onto a particular object. You went through that focusing scenario, you focusing attention and understanding their nature, and after having understood the real nature, now mind starts to relinquish them. Mind starts to find its freedom without associating any of these. Now, whenever mind does not associate anything, so that means the consciousness is not established. What we call as, it becomes unestablished consciousness. So, appatittita vijnana. Where the mind, the consciousness is now very much like pervaded. It is not focused onto one thing. You are aware of everything, like a kind of a passive observation. You are not focused onto a very special one thing, but you are aware of everything. You hear sounds, you feel things and you see things, but you are not purposely seeing something, not purposely listening to something, not purposely smelling some odor. You are not purposely selecting a particular taste. you are not volitionally, purposely, say, going through a particular mental state. So likewise, this volitional activities become less, but you are living, you are being aware, you are being conscious. So when that state is available, when that mind become unestablished, consciousness is unestablished, so there Buddha mentioned the four elements, those images of the four elements no more entangle in your mind. They are no more troubling in the mind. So the mind is very pure. So basically the mind become more spacious. Now if you consider, as I mentioned today, our minds are occupied with so many things. So our mind is occupied with so many four elements derived things. Say for example, say I have feeling about my body. I have feeling about my, say, my sister, my brother, my children, my mother, my father, my country, my vehicle. Now all these are four elements actually. So four elements are the ground level, the fundamental level. On top of that, we have constructed so many things, we have given so many names, and with which our mind is fully occupied. But when the consciousness become unestablished, so these kinds of four element based perceptions can't be in the mind. It can't trouble the mind. So the mind has to be fairly spacious. That is where the emptiness is coming to the picture. So mind is fairly empty from all these different kinds of perceptions. And even they come, you are not getting deluded by them. And so the mind is fairly empty, unestablished, very pure, and not in attention. So this is the way that we can explain it. So when either any of the aggregates, when it is developed to fair extent, so the mind become anisita, unassociated, it becomes non-grasping, anupadaya, and therefore the consciousness become unestablished, anidassano apatittita. So it does not represent anything. So it is, the awareness is there, pure awareness is there, that's all. Your awareness, your attention is not focused onto a selected thing. And there is no something. So that is an interesting area actually we need to discuss. Actually, as we further going on in this sutta, these are the areas that Buddha further investigate how we have to do some sort of a disintegration. We have to dismantle. Rather than accumulate things, we have to relinquish things. Rather than constructing things, we have to deconstruct. Rather than assembling things, we have to disassemble. Rather than occupying things in the mind, we have to very much like disoccupy or to vacate the things, so that mind become more spacious, more empty. Hope you got something.
That was great, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Does that suggest that by being in that unestablished consciousness with the spacious perception, would that automatically sort of disassemble the sankhara? Would it be a kind of automatic thing that would happen, or would it have to be done?
Yes.
Technique.
Definitely. Actually, that is where the Buddha mentioned visankhara gatang chittam. Now, mind no more construct things. It's seeing is just seeing. Hearing is just seeing. Smelling, tasting, recognizing, going to various sensations is just that it is. No more constructions. And mental images may appear in the mind. Thoughts might appear in the mind, but no constructions into them. So you simply let them go. So less and less constructions, less and less preparations, less and less mental activities in that sense. Activities in the sense that you are not become kind of a dumb, kind of a zombie type of a person. Rather, you've become fully conscious, but conscious awareness is there. Other than that, no constructions. So mind is not operating, making things, creating things, assembling things, constructing things. So that sort of activities become less and less. So that is why Buddha mentioned the term sabba sankhara samatu. So the constructions become, all the constructions become fairly tranquil. So you do not do much of constructions now, rather you like to tranquilize things. And instead of making intentions, volitions, volitional activities, you are minimizing volitional activities. So you allow things to happen. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, Therwan Sannai. Yeah, actually,
can you close these three words?
Actually, feelings are two types in that sense. So those can be bodily feelings as well as the mental feelings. Actually, we may start with the bodily feelings because that is more easier. Then probably we may go through the what you call the mental feelings as well, because it's a kind of a gradual process. Buddha mentioned that you start with bodily feelings. I mean, not really specially mentioned that you have to start with, but it is more easier in the practical terms. It is more easier to start with the bodily feelings and then slowly go to the mental side as well to understand various mental side. So, and again, when Buddha discuss about Vedana Anupassana, he discuss about Amisa Vedana and Niramisa Vedana. Now, Amisa in the sense, say, various kinds of feelings more related to the five senses, and the Niramisa is more maybe related to the meditation and maybe related to the other mental activities, that you have Niramisa kind of feelings, unworldly kind of feelings. So there it is more mental. So as you mentioned, so Vedana Anupassana is not merely the bodily feelings. It consists of bodily feelings plus mental feelings as well. Yeah, exactly. So that is what the vipassana is, where you see things as they truly are. So, I mean, whenever you do kayanupassana, so you are looking at the body in different perspectives. So you, rather than considering it as my body, my beautiful body, my this and that, so now you step back and observe the body. You understand what it is. You are trying to investigate what it is. So this way, in this way, we are giving a better chance to understand its real nature rather than being obsessed by its appearance. Now we step back and have an unbiased observation, non-judgmental type of observation, so that we get a better understanding about the body. So that is where Buddha gave various ways to investigate it. One way is its behavior. It is going through various postures. It is changing different postures, and you can't maintain the same posture for a long time. You feel a little bored or you feel painful, then you have to change the posture. And you may understand, I mean, how vulnerable it is, I mean, how difficult it is to maintain even a single posture. So you have a little bit of dispassion in that sense. And then Buddha mentioned, okay, it is breathing. So it's a breathing is an ongoing process available in the body. And as you understand that, then you feel, okay, without breathing it can't maintain itself, and breathing also changes. And even with that you understand its vulnerability. And then assume that you understand its components or anatomical parts. Various bodily parts are available. So Buddha gives the most common ones, 32 anatomical parts. And more you reflect them, then you see, I mean, which part am I going to call belong to me or myself or I am. So none of the parts I can recognize as myself or I am. So it's once they are assembled in a particular manner, then probably we call it as a male body, maybe a female body. So likewise. So you have another understanding. Then even going deeper, then we are going to the levels of the elements. So more we understand the element characteristics, now we are going to the more fundamental, primordial kind of behavior of the body. There you understand it is not kind of a thing, rather it's a manifestation of a four elements. They are constantly changing. Different element characteristics are constantly available. We don't know which one comes forward, and they are changing. They are vulnerable, and we don't have any control. So more and more you investigate like that, then you become more and more dispassionate. You don't want to recognize with the body. You compare, or rather you understand, okay, this four elements and the outside four elements are nothing but the four elements. There is no any significant value to the internal four elements. You can't say the internal four elements are more superior than the external four elements, but they are merely four elements. So that is where the whole physical world is nothing but four elements. That is where slowly you get kind of a broader understanding. So this insight practice is the key to understand about the proper nature of the body. And even Buddha mentioned further that after the death, what is going to happen to this body? In the Navasivathika, there are the stages of the corpse. Even that Buddha has given to understand the full spectrum of our body in different stages. So that helps us to have a proper understanding about the body.
Thank you, Bhante. I'd like to invite Chita Devi for the next question.
Yes, thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, my question is, on last week we spoke about consciousness, and the Buddha gave a lot of importance to the consciousness related to the other four aggregates. And today also we spoke about the mental, the volitional formations. No, so would I be correct if I say that the volitional formations and consciousness is what is really important, because our thoughts are the things that bring about all this, the craving and the loba dosha moha. So would that be right if I said that?
Actually, it depends on the person. So some people, understanding about the form is more important because they have more attachment towards the form. So more they investigate about the form, so that strong attachment become less and less. But some people are more into feeling tone, and they want to investigate further on the feelings. And some people are trapped in various perceptions. So they want to investigate about the perceptions so that they can avoid getting trapped in various perceptions. And some are more into the creativity and constructions and thinking, more, too much obsessive thinking. So they have to understand about the formations and maybe the consciousness. So it depends on the different personality characteristics or character traits. So we can't generalize this, telling that it is the formations everybody has to do or something like that. So different people have different characteristics, different personality traits. So therefore, we have to give, I mean, different recipes to different people.
So when we talk of the form, now like we look at ourselves in the mirror and or whatever, whoever looks at themselves in the mirror and they say, you know, yes, I've got beautiful hair or teeth or I'm looking beautiful or my dress is beautiful or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But those are, though we are looking at the form, that's correct, and we are looking at it, but it's really the thoughts that volitional formations and consciousness that is really coming into play.
Mm-hmm.
But we are looking at the form.
Yes,
isn't
yes.
That right?
True, true. The thing is, I mean, all these five aggregates are working together. So,
yeah.
I mean, if we consider the form part only, so actually the form part there is the reflection coming from the mirror, that the light and the all the material parts available in the mirror, and then whatever the material parts available in our eyes, so that is only the physical part. But as you mentioned, all the other things, whatever the feelings that we have and different perception that I am beautiful, I am now old, now these are different perceptions. And on top of that, we do a lot of constructions, thinking, so all these comes under the mental part. True, I mean, fairly heavy part is there in the mental side. At the same time, I mean, these five aggregates are very much interrelated, working together, and all five are present, but time to time one of them or a couple of them come forward and they become more stronger than the others.
Yes, but still now even if we have a nice feeling or an unpleasant feeling, that is also interpreted by the mind, you know, the mind.
Yes, yes,
is,
yes.
I believe it is
yes.
formed of the mental formations of the consciousness.
Correct. You are correct.
Would that be right if I said that?
Yes, 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 yes.
So, though we are breaking up, though, of course, in Vipassana, we look at this body and we go into the four elements and all that, but it is the mind that is controlling all this.
Yeah, we can say so, because mind is the one interpreting and constructing and all sorts of things. So, that is where...
Yes, and coming
so,
to the conclusion, it comes to the conclusion also.
Conclusion, sorry?
No, ultimately comes to the conclusion that this is a good thing or this is a bad thing, or I must stop this, or I'm proliferating.
Correct.
Or all those things.
Yeah.
It is all controlled by this mind, isn't it?
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah. I accept because, I mean, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, they are simply the apparatus. And the majority is done by the mind, the whole processing part, including so much of preconceived ideas and all sort of manipulations, everything's done by the mind, definitely.
Because the Buddha says in that sentence, I am now being devoured by form, which is true, but if you go into the, contemplate on it more and more, it is the mind that is being devouring
exactly.
the interpreting the form.
Exactly, yes, yes. Because now here, when I am calling I being devoured by form, so what part is I? So I part is basically the mind.
Yes.
So mind being and occupied by the form, in that sense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, and even you gave the example of anger, and you said, you know, this then the mind is starting now, you know, this person was... In the past did this, and in the present we'll do this, and then the mind is starting to weave all these stories, and then there is so much of more and more anger. So it started with the feeling. Started with the feeling, but the mind took over.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we discussed in the Madhupindika Sutta, where this whole construction happened, how this whole process happened in cause and effect relationship. Say, actually, when whatever the sensory object come in line with the sense object, sense faculty, then the sense consciousness arises. Say, whenever it encounters the form, then the I consciousness. And when these three happen again and again, this whole impingement happen again and again, then the feeling arises. So
yes.
when we feel we want to recognize it, when we are recognizing, okay, I want to think about it Now I am thinking.
Yeah.
Now I am putting my hand. Now I am interfering. Now, now I am thinking, 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 ultimately overthinking, and ultimately going to the mental proliferation. So this is how Buddha explained kind of a more, say, subtle manner. So the mental proliferation is not the one immediately happen, rather it's before that there are a fair amount of thinking, our participation, our intentional thinking. And even before that, there is kind of feeling and recognition. And even before that, kind of a thing happened because of the cause and effect relationship.
So, really to prevent all of that, we have to really jump on the thoughts that come. Whatever,
yes.
We can jump on that
and
identify that, then we can stop all of that.
Yes.
And what the Buddha also said, I be devoured by form, we can stop that also.
Sure, definitely. That is where we need to minimize as much as possible about the mental proliferation. Once we minimize, avoid mental proliferation. And now we can recognize whether I am thinking something useful, something beneficial, or is it something harmful. Then we can do some adjustments to our thinking. I mean, it may not be the mental proliferation. It may not be the mental proliferation, but what I am thinking. So that thinking also can be adjusted, if possible, if we can adjust.
Yes.
So what it is necessary to think, only I am thinking. When it is not necessary, I am keeping the mind silent. So I'm enjoying some sort of an inner silence, completely free from inner chatter. So that is more constructive, that is more beneficial to ourselves, and it is mentally beneficial, and our bodily, I mean healthily it is beneficial. And that is the path actually. So that is where Buddha mentioned, I mean, whenever you are alone, try to be mindful, try to be silent. If you want to talk, then talk something which is beneficial. Similarly, whenever you are thinking, check whether you are thinking something beneficial. If not, keep the mind silent.
That's the only way that we can come to that level, no? That you said that we can come to this empty, unestablished, pure, spacious consciousness. That is our goal, but we can only get to that by contemplating.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we have allowed our minds to run around all over the place and, we could control it at that time, if we could sit down and then contemplate even about what happened before,
mm-hmm.
that is the only way that we can get better in this process, isn't it, Mate?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that is where Buddha tell in various suttas, say for example, in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, so instead of going to the mental proliferation, so you are invited to come back again and again to that neutral, unconstructed, unattached kind of mentality. So more and more, so your mental state become more stable and unagitated, calm, tranquil. So that is the state that Buddha asked us to associate more and more.
Yeah, that is the goal.
That is the goal.
Goal.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes,
all these things
yes.
are happening to us and we are getting devoured by all these things.
Yeah.
But if we understand that this is the thoughts that are the mind, the thoughts and the consciousness that is really acting with the other five activities, then we are, that is the start.
Yes, yes. I mean, that is where...
It's a start.
So we are very much like dismantling our thoughts. So...
Yes.
So we understand, we investigate our thoughts, what we are thinking, why we are thinking, how we are participating, how we are unnecessarily putting our hand, how we are unnecessarily interfering. So more and more all our stupid activities that we do, participation we do, unnecessary participation we do. So those things we are understanding. So more and more we understand, so we become calm, not participating, allow thoughts to happen and they go. I am not bothered by them. They are not mine. They are not myself. They are merely thoughts. So likewise, one become more and more dispassionate towards thoughts, and one can enjoy this inner silence, give more value to that inner silence, inner understanding, than too much thinking.
Yes, but I always go to the four elements.
That's up to you. No problem.
Four elements.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that is the form and everything outside of, as you said earlier in your talk, that everything is the four elements, my family and the world.
Yes, yes.
Everything is the four elements. So I start with the four elements, always.
Can.
But then you break it down to very simple thing. If there is no substance, it's colorless. Isn't that right, Bhakti?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, actually, it depends on the people, the practitioner. Not everyone needs to start with, the four elements. I mean, if they are more familiar with four elements, that more comfortable with that, they can start with that. If they are more comfortable with feelings, they can start with that. So likewise, different people have different approaches. So doesn't matter. So whatever it is convenient, we can start with. But as you said,
but at the end of the day, everything is cold. There is no substance, whether all the form and feelings and so forth.
Yeah.
They are all colorless and there is no substance. So you can start with anything, but at the end of the day, there
yes.
is nothing.
Yes.
That's what we have to understand.
Yes.
In our thoughts.
Yes. True. Correct.
Yeah. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
The next question from the chat. Let's go to you. The next three tens, Tanti.
Yeah.
You may meet.
Yeah, thank you, Danny. Bhante, my name is Sam.
Yes.
I was wondering whether there's a clear definitional difference between Sankara and Papaccha. Because I'm thinking that they both arise from vitakka.
Mm-hmm.
So is papancha an excessive
sankara.
Degree of sankara mm-hmm. or not?
Yeah, we can say so. Actually, at the papancha level, the person who is subjected to become very much beyond his control. Now, papancha is the one controlling him. So the person undergoing it has become kind of a slave to that. So he has loosened his controllability. That is the papancha level. But at the sankhara level, he may actively still participating and he actively thinking, purposely thinking. He is delighted in thinking. So that sort of thing is there. His participation is there. But at the papancha level, so he become a victim of that whole process.
You lost control.
Exactly.
Okay. So it's kind of a gray area between the two in some ways.
Right? Yeah, so when you are going to switch or going under the papancha, under the kind of becoming a slave to the thinking, is very vague in that sense. Yes.
Yeah.
So we start thinking, we actively participate in that thinking, and more the mind get in the momentum, develop the momentum, ultimately we lose our control.
Right. So the other question I have, Bhante, is that in Madhupindika Sutta, it clearly says, but you don't have to go through sankhara to get to papancha, right? You can get direct to papancha as well, correct?
No, the thing is, now even at the vitakka level, the constructions are there. Sankharas are there.
So sankharas are there, okay.
Yes. Because, thinking in the sense, so thinking itself is sankhara.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I got it. Yeah. Thank you,
okay.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, the next question, Bhante, is, I have an allergic cough. How can I analytically comprehend this distasteful stage? How can I overcome this irritable and at times depressing experience?
Can you repeat the question, Jennifer?
Sure, but yes, it's a question from the chat. It says, I have an allergic cough.
Oh.
How can I analytically comprehend this distasteful stage?
I see.
And how can I overcome this irritable and at times depressing experience?
Uh-huh. So basically, if it is a sign of a bodily disease, first of all, you better consult a doctor. And from the mind side, actually, you can recognize the very early stages of the development of this process. More and more you become mindful. Say, for example, if you are more mindful, if your mindfulness is sharp, then the very early signs of this process you can understand. So there could be a kind of a solution you can recognize, because ultimately when you become fairly subjected to this process, then you are helpless. It is grown to some extent. But more you are mindful, you can recognize the early signs, early stages of this disease. And on the other hand, more and more you are mindful, you can avoid that depressing part. So the depressing part is something that you are adding, because you think, why it is happening to me again? I can't do it again. Why I am going through it again? So much of eye making, so much of conditioning process going on, and you recognize yourself as a poor victim of this process. Now so much of personifying is there. A personal involvement is there. You are excessively participating in the whole process. So the physical discomfort is one thing, and you are making it your cough, your irritation, your allergic reaction. So that is another thing. If you can keep the bodily pain as bodily pain without constructing based upon that, so that helps you to minimize. So mind-made suffering, so mind-made depression. So the bodily pain, of course, is there, that you have to take some medicine. But how about minimizing the mind-made suffering? So that is where the mindfulness and the Buddha's teaching is quite helpful, so that we can have a kind of a distant observation of the bodily pain, discomfort, whatever disease, and maintain kind of an uninvolved observation. So we are not going to claim, this is my pain, this is my thing, this is this and that. So I am accepting, okay, now the body is going through some suffering, this is kind of painful, this is the situation of the body. So I am having a kind of a radical acceptance of the situation. I am not trying to make something from it. I am not trying to claim it as mine. I am not trying to add to it. I am not putting myself as a poor person onto it. That actually helps to minimize the mental part, mental suffering.
Thank you, Sensei.
Okay, that's all, right?
Sorry. Looks like there's two more questions.
Ah, really?
Sensei.
I see.
Yeah, we have a very engaged participant.
Good.
So the next one is actually a follow-up from a previous question and your response, Bhante. So it asked, dear Bhante, to continue on the Vedana Nupassana earlier, that it also include mental feelings. What is Chitana Nupassana? This also reflects on mental feelings. What is the difference?
Uh-huh. Correct. Actually, in the Chitta Nupassana, you go more into the details. So whenever you have some lustful thoughts, when you have, irritation, when you have hatred, you have delusion, you have involvement, entanglement, when the mind is concentrated, when the mind is blissful. So different states of mind is further understood in the Chittanupassana. But in the Vedananupassana, you are simply taking the feeling component only, not going into detail. Say, suppose there you are going through some angry thought, but you are not considering the anger, but you are feeling the burning part, the suffering part, the uncomfortable feeling you have. So only the feeling part is considered, at the Vedanupassana, but on the other hand, in the Chittanupassana, you are going into more detail, kind of distinctly recognizing these subtle mental states, whether it is lustful, whether it is hateful, whether it is, say, involved, entangled, or blissful, concentrated, or more distracted, or more contracted. So likewise, mind is carefully investigated at the Chittanupassana level.
While we wait, Bhante, for the Saturday morning Dhamma discourse, who is it that manages that class, Bhante? I'd like to connect the participant with that person for more information.
You mean the Shalika? She's the one handling the Saturday, you mean my program, Saturday, every last Saturday program?
Yes, Bhante.
Clarity of mind.
Yes, that's right. What is her last name?
Shalika De Silva.
Oh, okay.
I think she's participating even now. So.
Oh, okay.
Probably, you may have her email address.
Yeah. Okay. I will reach out to her. I think I do have her email
address.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
So this last question that I got, that I received, Bhante, I'm not sure, I don't understand it, but perhaps you do. I'm also going to send it to you directly. Give me one moment. And then I'll read this one out loud. So the question asks, if one can try eliminate all your sangha, is that we can call as noble achievement, Bhante?
Okay, actually the sangha here is not the sangha that we typically call Buddha Dhamma sangha. That this sangha is not something that. So sangha here, I think, as far as I can remember, some sort of engagement, some sort of entanglement, kind of defilement available in the mind. So the term sangha has different meanings. So I need to check actually certain verses are there, sangati gato or something like that. So let me find it out and give you the exact answer. I can't exactly remember. As far as I can remember, sangha is a Pali term for defilements, but I need to check that.
The person that asked the question, Ananda, has raised his hand. So, Ananda, I don't know if you have a follow-up to what Bhante just mentioned.
I am extremely sorry, Bhante, and everybody. The word I tried to type is sangha is wrong. It is coming from the keyboard. Actually, what I mean was sanya.
Sanya, ah.
Sanya,
yeah.
Because I'm very fond of this... Ananda Sanya, the sutra,
right,
with what you have explained to me some time back, Bhante.
Right.
I am extremely sorry, I couldn't find, because I know how to write it single, but
right,
not
right,
in
right.
English. Sorry.
Fine. Okay, this Sanya, actually, when we are discussing the perception aggregate, we'll see, because now each and every aggregate, whenever we are working on it, when we do the insight practice, so in certain suttas, Buddha explained what would be the ultimate result. Say, for example, when it comes to the form aggregate, so even the perceptions of the forms, say patavi sanya, apo sanya, heat, this tejo sanya, all sorts of the element related sanya can't be in the mind. So more you develop, so those kind of sanyas have to be abandoned in the mind. And when it comes to perceptions, so one may have to have a kind of a dispassion towards the perception. So you are no more giving value to the perceptions. You recognize perception as perception. They are merely a mirage. They are not real. So they are mind-made or they are mental constructs. or they are available in the mind, they are not really available in the outside. Now, say for example, the simile that Buddha given for sannya is the mirage. Now, whenever we see a mirage, we immediately get the wrong perception of water. But immediately, if we have some wisdom, then we have to correct ourselves, telling, okay, this is not water, this is a mirage. So similarly, whenever a sign appears in the mind, we immediately attribute it to a person. Okay, this is my son, this is my brother, this is my mother. But at that time, rather than attributing like that, how about instructing the mind, advising the mind, don't get entangled, this is an image, this is a sign. So that is where we have to be careful, we have to do the practice. So more and more we do that, so these different mental images, sannya available in the mind, become less and less, more weaker and weaker. And ultimately, even the perceptions we have, okay, I like this person, I don't like this person, he's a good person, he's a bad person. So likewise, I have holding so much of perception related to the people, so much perceptions about various other things. And I think these perceptions are correct. These perceptions are permanent. They are the correct perceptions. My perception is correct, your perception is wrong. So I have these kinds of various attitudes inbuilt in myself. If I can understand even these levels, then further I can cleanse my mind, clear my mind, and then I can understand, okay, these perceptions are also changing. People can change, I can change, the weather can change, the other, maybe politicians can change, whatever it is, everything can change. So I don't need to strongly hold to a particular perception. So likewise, the sannya has a huge variation, kind of a large variation. You may start with little signs, marks, etc., and storing them as different, say, sannya perceptions. And even later, you have different preconceived ideas, perceptions, and that also that we have to work on.
Thank you, Bhante, but you know, from the day we born to this world, you know, we are trying to grasp the sannyas rather than avoid them.
Yes,
and,
yes.
Even the teaching, you know, for example, I am not talking anything against, I am really trying to avoid those sannyas and try to be, you know, very calm and, you know, without anything. I am practicing it. I think everybody is trying to do that. But I would like to raise a question. So, example, when you are doing Attika sannya, so again, you are trying to develop a set of type of sannya. Is that correct?
Correct, correct. So, that is where, I mean, even if you consider what you call the Girimananda Sutta. So Buddha talks about 9 types of sannya, which is more helpful, beneficial. Now, in a way, we are cultivating first certain necessary, beneficial type of sannya instead of harmful, unnecessary type of sannya. So we are trying to eliminate unnecessary, harmful sannya instead of we are trying to develop beneficial, correct, non-harmful type of sannya. And later, you may be able to overcome everything. So it is not necessary even to maintain, hold strongly to any sannya, but you are using it like a medicine to eliminate the wrong sannya.
You mean facilitating
the exactly. Sannyas, yes, think. Yes, yes, that's right.
Thank you very much. I really learned a lot in a few minutes. Thanks.
Okay. I think Jennifer, we have spent a fair amount of time today.
Yes, Bhante.
Yeah, I think some of you may be feeling quite sleepy now. So then we'll wind up the session today. So thank you very much for all of your active participation. So today we have spent around 2 hours discussing Buddha's teaching and discussing the Dhamma. So with that, we were able to accumulate a lot of merits. Let's share these merits with all the past devil relatives, with all the celestial beings, and whoever in need of merits. Let's wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses.
එතාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුුණ්‍ය සම්පදං සබ්බේ දේවා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා. එතාවතාචම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුුණ්‍ය සම්පදං සබ්බේ භූතා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා. එතාවතාචම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුුණ්‍ය සම්පදං සබ්බේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා. ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං. ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං. ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං. ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ. ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ. ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ. ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා. ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා. ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා. සාදු සාදු සාදු.